Welcome to the Recovery Roadrunners podcast. Today, I have got Maurice Lohman with me, the Marathon Panda. He's a passionate marathoner and ultra runner fueled by the gratitude of sobriety. His sobriety date is March 12th, 2015, and he's currently on a run streak of at minimum 1 mile a day, although it's usually more than that, which has exceeded 3,000 days. He has some big goals coming up this year, including the Boston Marathon and a return to the Riverlands 100. Maurice, in my opinion, is a local celebrity. Knowing him is a conversation starter. I was just on a yoga retreat in Costa Rica. Everybody knows him. He seems to really touch and positively affect those he comes in contact with. And the level of positivity in Maurice is infectious, and he's someone I'd like to be around more. His motto is that he's now running the streets that used to run him, and I love that. Welcome to the podcast, Maurice. How are you?
Happy Friday, Doug. That is quite possibly the coolest and best intro ever. So thank you so much for that. Oh. That's very awesome and very humbling. Thank you. Happy Friday.
Thank you. I want to start with a simple question. Where did the nickname Marathon Panda come from?
Well, I love that question. Trying to make it short and sweet. When I was a toddler, my grandmother, aka Nana, gave me a panda bear stuffed animal that I was just absolutely infatuated with. I went everywhere with it. I loved pandas growing up to the tune of getting posters, reading about them in National Geographic, and so forth. So I was always intrigued by the animal, always loved the animal. My Nana used to tell me that I was going to be a runner with my strong legs. But as a child, I never grasped that. I never did any type of track and field or anything like that. And I say the same corny joke all the time. Like, I played all sports, but I was the kid that they put in for four plays because his mom was, you know, in the bleachers watching. And I showed up to every practice with enthusiasm. So they had to put me in. With all that being said, when I picked up running as an adult, and then when I started posting on social media, I kind of came up with this thing where I called myself, it didn't start off with the Marathon Panda, but I called myself the Panda in honor of my grandmother, my Nana. And because I'm half black, I'm half white, I've always been a little chubby. And I think I'm a pretty playful guy. Like, I'm pretty laid back. So I like it. So that's my animal. I know it's kind of like incorrect to use the term spirit animal, but if I had a animal that I could relate to, I think it would be the panda.
Oh, that's spectacular. Your Nana was really intuitive there. That's crazy that she said you were going to be a runner and then here you are.
And here I am. So a lot of times I do mention her because I feel like it was almost like it was like, it's just like a meant to be thing. Running obviously is the foundation of my sobriety. The fact that I'm able to call myself a runner and identify as a runner, when I say that because I'm so grateful that the community is so inclusive. I make the same corny jokes all the time. You'll hear me say things like, if I love the Bruins, they're not going to open up the garden and let me play on a Friday night with the Bruins. But I love running, and they let me into all these awesome communities, from 5Ks to the Boston Marathon to, you know, now the ultra running community. So it's very inclusive. And I believe the inclusivity from the beginning for me is what helped me get so fully immersed in the community. I had always felt so welcomed. So now I feel like it's my duty to not only represent that for others, but to kind of promote that. With everything going on in the world today, I've always had a positive experience with the running community. And I want everybody to be able to experience that, whether it's a different social economic class that you come from, whether it's because you're a person of color, whether it's because gender identity, anything that goes on in today's world, I want everybody to know that my experience has always been positive. So I feel like it's my duty to kind of share that with everybody and let everybody know, if you show up, you're going to find somebody that's going to give you love and positivity.
That's awesome. You lead me into something when you called yourself a runner, and it's something that I've heard from a lot of people. A lot of people have a difficult time embracing the identity of being a runner. They go, oh, I'm too slow, or, you know, I see all these other people doing things, or I think, you know, too, a lot of people coming into recovery sort of lack self-worth and confidence, and they have a tough time giving themselves the grace to be the things that they're intended to be. Did you have an issue with that when you got sober and you started running? Or I'm not sure, did you run before you were sober as well?
Oh, so great question. Running was always my go-to activity. If I had a bad night of drinking, drugging, and I wanted to, like, you know, shake the rust off the next morning, I'd throw on some sneakers and joggers and go for, yes, cotton joggers, probably. Crazy. I'd go for a run, and I never stayed consistent. Like lifting weights, the gym, it wasn't on my radar at the time. The running was like my go-to activity, running or biking, but mostly running. I never stayed consistent with it because my lifestyle was not consistently focused on health and wellness and overall well-being. I struggled with, you know, alcoholism and hardcore drug addiction for years. So with that being said, when I did start becoming serious about my sobriety, my health, my wellness, running was my go-to every single day. I didn't struggle with calling myself a runner or identifying as a runner. I do remember, like, running consistently every day, going to this local track. It was right near the men's program that I was in. It was after the first 90 days that I could actually leave the property. It was a men's rehab program. This is going way back to 2009. And the first time I could leave the program, I wanted to run laps at the local track. I remember I couldn't wait till I could go there. So I run all the way to the track, probably a mile and a half, 2 miles away. Get to the track, I start running laps. And that was my routine every day that I could leave. So a few days a week. And there was a young lady there, and she was just beast mode. Laps, push-ups, pull-ups, just the whole nine. Every time I was out there, she was out there working hard, and I would always give her a wave. And I remember I never got anything back. And to me, even to this day, I got to be honest, it's one of my pet peeves. I'm a big waver. I'm a big, hey, good morning. I'll yell out, happy Friday, awesome work, you look great, great job, keep going. Obviously, everybody's not going to be 100% excited to yell back something, but a lot of people will receive and reciprocate with some positivity. And I remember the first time she gave me a little wave back and said, good work today. And it literally put me on another level of, like, emotional. Like an emotional high. I ran back to the building where I was staying, the program, and I said, I had this sense of, like, I did it. Like, I received some credibility. Like, I received some recognition. This lady said, good job. And she's a beast. She's out there. So I remember that. But to kind of answer your question more directly, with me, running is what helped me maintain the sobriety, because I do have to admit, there was a time where, during one of my relapses, where I tried to do both. I tried to call myself, you know, this runner, this guy that's training for the marathons, and still tried to go out on the weekends. And you can't do both. So I told myself, if you want to be Mr. Marathon Maurice, and you want to train for the marathon distance, and you want to run consistently, and you want to be involved in this community, then you can't be somebody that touches drugs and alcohol ever. The first time I finished a full marathon, that finish line high, that natural adrenaline, that runner's high per se, is what told me that I didn't need to chase any type of substance or mind altering, you know, drug or alcohol to receive that kind of high. I was on a natural high being around my family, my mom, my aunt specifically, in that finish line high of the 26.2 miles. I'll never forget. I told myself I would never go back to drugs after finishing my first marathon in 2014 in Newport. And I did have one relapse that winter, but snapped out of it. And then 2015, obviously, is when I got clean and sober thankfully for good.
And congratulations, by the way. And you had celebrated 9 years of sobriety just a little over a week ago. And that is just awesome. That is just such a testament. You'll be coming up on double digits next year.
Yes. And I really can't believe it. I continue to stay vocal about it, because when you look at the bigger picture, the last time that I had 9 years of continued sobriety was when I was 9 years old. because when I was 18 years old, I was already, you know, drinking alcohol and smoking weed. So to have 9 years of continued sobriety is not only a gift. We just lost somebody from my hometown 2 mornings ago, Wednesday morning, he passed, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. And I'm never, ever not grateful for the fact that I made it out in one piece and that my unintentional, that's the word I like to use, overdoses, I was able to be brought back to life, because I would never be here if it wasn't for like the first responders in Seekonk, Massachusetts, Providence, Rhode Island.
We're very lucky to get this second chance in life. And I'm so happy to see you doing the things that you're doing. You talked a little bit about the runner's high. And I remember when I first experienced it, it happened for me, not when I finished the first marathon. When I first got sober, I was well overweight, like around 350 pounds. And I walked a lot for a year. And this thought got in my head of, I've never run before. I wonder if I can run from this telephone pole to that telephone pole. And so I did. And I started to get this mental clarity that I had never experienced before. And I realized that that's what I had been seeking my whole life. That's what I had wanted alcohol and drugs to do for me, to just quiet everything that was going on in my head. And I went, oh yeah, yeah. I wish I would have found this a lot sooner.
Amen. That's exactly how I feel.
You talked a little bit about your drinking and drug use and everything. And I'd love it if you could talk to us just a little bit about, you know, what it was like when you were in that part of your life, you know, the things that happened to bring you towards sobriety, and, you know, what it's like now.
So as a middle schooler, and then even into high school, I was strictly focused on academics, strictly focused on, you know, a couple of my very close friends, you know, hanging out after school, doing BMX biking, video games, getting a job as soon as possible so I could, you know, buy the cool sneakers and buy the new video games. Drugs were not on my radar. I was one of the kids that said, I'll never smoke pot. You know, that's for losers. I'll never do that. That's, you know, I would never do cocaine. That's just crazy. I had only seen it in movies, actually. I had never seen it in real life. So fast forward to senior year of high school, and I started experimenting with smoking weed. And unfortunately, it escalated quickly. I was smoking all of the time, and it gave me a sense of like, I'm hanging out with the cool kids, when the cool kids were I'm 45 years old, and you get that clarity, obviously, when you were just talking about the cool kids were the ones that were still focused on the academics and getting ready for college, like I was supposed to be doing. And I'm a poster boy for the fact that marijuana is a gateway drug. I'm not a medical professional. I get it. I know it can be it's a highly debatable subject nowadays, especially with it being legal in so many states. And it's very helpful for so many people in a medicinal way. I'm not a medical professional, so I never want to come across like I am. My personal experience is that marijuana was the gateway drug for me. As soon as I started smoking, I wanted to see what else was out there. I said, if I can feel this good off of smoking a joint, then, you know, I mean, we were 18 years old and we were lacing our weed with cocaine. That was when I was introduced to cocaine. I said I would never touch it in any other way. Like I would never put a straw up my nose and do it. And then I was introduced to selling cocaine. That spiraled out of control quickly, because I said once again that I would never touch it. And here I am dealing it, putting it in my weed. And before you know it, I did try it. That was my most severe downfall, because I was immediately hooked. I'll never forget the first time trying it. I was immediately hooked. I turned from somebody that said they would never try the stuff to somebody that picked up a severe habit, using it every single day, still dealing it. Now, here's a kid that grew up in the suburbs, always had a part-time job, had a full-time job at the age of, you know, So didn't go into college because I was too busy partying and trying to hang out with what I thought was the cool crowd. And I never like to blame it on peer pressure and stuff like that. I was making my own decisions. But because I started drinking and using substances, I was hanging out with people that drank and used substances and not the people that were focused on more productive activities, not pursuing my college application goals, not pursuing that four-year goal that I had set for myself. I managed to make it through a technical school. It was a nine-month computer tech program that I did after high school. I ended up getting a full-time job at a sales role at a car dealership. But once again, I had already been drinking, smoking, and using coke on a daily basis. So I was a functional alcoholic drug addict for years. It always hindered my progress. I would be everybody's favorite employee for 9 months, for 10 months, for a year. And then it would be obvious that I had some severe issues, showing up late, bloodshot eyes, smelling like liquor, shirt and tie looking a mess because I probably had it on the day before, or I pulled it out of the backseat of my car because I slept somewhere else or I didn't sleep. So it became obvious. My first real wake-up call was I had left my first full-time job to take what I thought was kind of like a promotion. It was a luxury brand. I had left Toyota and went to Lexus for a job offer. And within the first few months, I was fired for a random drug test and failing that. I tried to apply at another place and did not get the job because I failed the drug test. So it became obvious that I had a problem. I went to some self-help places. I remember going into Kodak. They took my health insurance. I said, hey, you know, my name's Maurice. I have a drug and alcohol problem. I need help. And they set me up with some group meetings. And I think it's a combination of things. I wasn't 100% ready to surrender at that time and give up. I knew I needed help. I wanted the counseling, but I mean, I was showing up to the group meetings under the influence. I was leaving the group meetings 15 minutes early to go, you know, do some bumps and smoke a cigarette outside. So I wasn't ready, even though I knew I needed help. And I struggled with that lifestyle for over 8 to 10 years, bouncing from sales job to sales job. I sold everything from, you know, mortgages to cars, and never really getting any type of long-term sobriety. I would clean myself up for a few months and then bounce right back into, you know, the hardcore drug use. All of the things I said I would never do, I ended up doing. So the cocaine led to crack cocaine, led to, you know, IV drug use, whether it was methamphetamine, whether it was heroin. These are things that I would always kind of say, I'm never going to do that. I'm not as bad as that guy. That guy shoots up. I'm not as bad as that guy. He's standing on a corner holding a sign. And my thing was, I always had that hustler mindset where I could make money on the street. I could make money, you know, with a job. I always managed to have a job no matter what. And that justified my drug use for years. After the rehab in 2009 that I talked about and I started running consistently, I stayed clean and sober for over 3.5 years, graduated the program, became a resident assistant at the program, moved into a sober living facility, a house with other men on the same path as me, and was really doing well. Was hanging out with my family, was, you know, going to the gym, was running consistently just on my own, hanging out with my son. Just everything was falling into place. I had a van that was registered and insured and all legit. And as anybody like in recovery knows, sometimes those little things are like such a big deal. Like I hadn't had a legit driver's license and car registered in years. So to have that with the full-time job, everything was falling into place. And for some reason, I thought I could get away with some weekend partying. And I threw away 3.5 years of sobriety in 2012. And it was 2012 and 13 were really, really dark years for me because I started doing things that I had never done before, like the crack cocaine every day, like the meth use. My story, I'm always super transparent about it. It started off with working at some pretty seedy nightclubs and hanging out with some pretty questionable individuals. And then just, you know, you find yourself in what I like to call the darkest corners of addiction.
Yeah.
And I'm literally hanging out on back streets, you know, looking for people that want to party, looking for people that want to purchase drugs, and kind of like an anything goes kind of scenario where, you know, if somebody wants to do something, I'm down to do it. So some really, really dark corners that included like sexual activity for drug and alcohol and money and stuff like that. So never proud of it, but not ashamed of it. And it's always to let people know if you yourself or anybody in your family is struggling and they've hit the point where you think there's no more hope. Like I can remember having those conversations with my mom and knowing how much it hurt her when she knew that I was like literally hanging behind, you know, an adult video store, hanging out, looking for people to hang out with and make money and do drugs. And she just couldn't believe that her son had gotten to that point. And in my mind, I always had the self-awareness that I could get better, that if I stopped doing what I was doing, I could live a good life. I would look at, like, it sounds silly, but I would look at like 5 p.m. traffic on a Friday afternoon and say, these people are living the good life. They all just worked all week. They're going to cash their checks, whatever, you know, obviously direct deposit, you know what I'm trying to say. But they're going home to their family. They're going to make dinner. They're going to make weekend plans. They're going to live a normal life. And here I am sitting on the side of the road, you know, smoking a cigarette, drinking vodka, like waiting for the next person that wants to party all weekend. And I used to say, I'm going to get out of this underworld and I'm going to be above in the world. And that was kind of my mindset. I just knew I had to stop. And it was on that street where I literally took the drugs that were in my pocket, handed them off to somebody. They couldn't believe it. I had the vodka. I had the cigarette. I wasn't ready to let that go. I walked away. I said, I'm never doing drugs again. That Saturday and Sunday, I finished the vodka and the cigarettes. And on Monday morning, I never looked back. I never picked up drugs, alcohol, tobacco ever again.
Wow, man. Wow. That's amazing that you had that presence of mind to be able to put that stuff down. And, you know, it's clearly been a journey since you had other periods of sobriety. And that's the thing a lot of people don't realize. It doesn't just happen all at once sometimes. You've got to work towards it.
You do. And there was always, sorry to cut you off, but I just wanted to add something. At that time, there were a couple of individuals, Richie and Jonathan, that were doing street outreach. And they came upon me and they said, Maurice, like, what are you doing? We remember, like, it was just the last year you were on Facebook posting, you know, I'm running marathons, I'm sober, I found a new journey in life. They said, you looked awesome. We're so proud of you. Like you can snap back. You can get that back. What do you need? Do you need help? Do you need a place to come and take a shower tonight? We're not going to give you money, but do you need us to buy you food? We love you. We're here for you. You can get that life back. And it was that kind of pep talk combined with knowing I had a mom and dad, knowing I had a brother, knowing I had two sons out there that would applaud my progress in the right direction if I started to make it. So I just wanted to add that.
Yeah, I love that people are doing things like this in the world. And that's what I try to do. I try to be very transparent about my story because I want to help people. And I try to make myself available to others when they're able to reach out for help or even sometimes before then. You know, I do just want to say, too, I'm sorry about the friend that you lost. You had mentioned that earlier. I've lost some friends, too. And it's always so painful to watch people that you're trying to help not be able to get it and fall back into it. You know, I have a friend who fell back into the fentanyl thing recently, and I don't know where he is now, which is just so sad.
It is very sad.
Oh, my God. Like, I can relate so much to your story. It's crazy how similar it is to mine.
How many years do you have now?
I have 8 years. 8 years.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
I wouldn't have known if you didn't share with me when we went for the trail run.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have known.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, even down to, I was one who didn't start, you know, drinking and smoking weed and everything until about my junior year of high school. And it just set my life on a course that of something that I never thought my life would be, you know, not performing in college and dropping out. And then all of the nevers, like you said, there were so many things that I said I would never do that eventually became normal. And then you surround yourself with people who are doing similar things. So it just seems more normal.
It becomes the normal.
Yeah.
It becomes the normal. I look back at some of the things I used to do on a day-to-day basis, and I just cannot believe it. And I used to act like it was normal.
Yeah.
I really would. I would call family members and tell them, you know, I'm doing good. I'm doing good. And I really wasn't. I was just doing the craziest, craziest things.
Yeah. Yeah. It's nuts, you know? And then for me, it eventually got into pain pills, which that was a quick downfall, let me tell you. And I'm glad.
I can imagine.
I'm glad, you know, I landed in the hospital when I did and was able to get things together, because it wasn't too many steps away from, you know, not being able to come back. Let's switch it to some of the more positive things. I mean, that's an amazing story.
Thank you.
So you've got, you know, 9 years of sobriety, and now you're just doing incredible things. You're running 100 milers. You've got the Riverlands 100 coming up in Turner, Maine soon. You're involved with the Heron Project, and you're running the Boston Marathon in a purple suit.
Yes.
Hell yeah.
Yes.
Can you talk about some of your upcoming running goals and things you're excited about? Tell me a little bit about Riverlands. You had a tough time with that last year, right? And you're looking for redemption this year?
I am looking for redemption, yes. So I'm currently 2 for 6 in the 100-mile distance. I love the marathon distance. Boston will be my 6th Boston and 42nd marathon overall. I was introduced to the ultra running community several years ago when I volunteered for a 24-hour event that's held in Bristol, Rhode Island, called the Anchor Down Ultra, which I did my first one in 2022, my first 24-hour, and then my second one in 2023. I still have not hit the 100-mile distance there. That's how you get the elusive buckle at that event. I did my very first 100 at the Javelina in Arizona in 2022, and I completed it, and I was just, I can't say it enough that it's like with anything, and you know, the finish line is never guaranteed. Miles 40 through 70, I just had all of the doubt in the world. Every doubt, every negative thought, I had to remind myself that I literally wear sweatshirts that say positivity always. you can't be the positive pander if you're out here, you know, in walking in self-doubt and pity and reminding myself that you're the one who talks about gratitude. You're the one who talks about positivity. Look how beautiful it is out here. When will you be able to run in the desert with cactuses and sunrises and sunsets and awesome people? And it's not about it. Like, I'm never going to win one of these things. I say that all of the time. And that's what's so cool about running. Like, the people that are going to win, they're excited that you're there too. And then we're excited to be there. I want to be everybody's cheerleader. I want to let everybody know that, yes, my name is Maurice. Hey, look at me. Here's my story. But guess what? We all have stories. And that's what fuels me. But finished the Javelina. Had a couple of misfires last year, including the Riverlands 100 in Turner, Maine, which I'm returning to answer the question more directly. It's a 25-mile loop 4 times. I showed up pretty well-trained for the distance. I put down a couple of 100-mile weeks before the taper. I did some elevation training, but just on pavement on the east side of Providence with hill repeats. Not enough trail training and not enough technical trail training.
Yeah.
But went into the event wicked positive, wicked excited, wicked pumped up. Did fantastic and hit the 75-mile checkpoint with just under a couple of minutes to spare. So I only had one 25-mile loop left. So I'm thinking to myself, I got this. This is awesome. Let's go get it. 25 miles. I already ran 75. Like that. How are you going to run 25 miles? Well, because you just ran 75. That's how you're going to do it. Like, it's like I was so pumped up and the sunrise was going to come up. I had gotten through the hardest part of the race, which was the overnight portion. And the hardest for me, everybody's different. For me, the overnight stuff is always the most difficult.
I've heard that.
I have the headlamp. I had a brand new Oh, no, I hadn't had the waist lamp at this time. This is what made me go buy the waist lamp. I had the headlamp. I had a friend that was with me. That was very encouraging. And we're going to touch on that again in a second. But to just to kind of give you the whole scope, I hit the 80-mile aid station. And it was myself and two other runners. And the guy looked at his watch and he had like a sorry face on. He said, "I'm sorry, guys." And I didn't know why. And this is why maybe you should read the emails in detail. Maybe you should study the race in detail. I usually don't. I like to show up and rock it, but it's not always the best game plan. And he said, "I'm sorry, guys, you're not going to make it. We only had, per se, 90 minutes to make it to the next checkpoint, which was the 88-mile checkpoint." Mm. Now, 90 minutes to run 8 miles in any other conditions is absolutely doable, okay? But not with 80 miles on my legs and not on that yeah. terrain. The terrain was definitely a wake-up call that I had to do more training on technical terrain. There was a ton of elevation, which I felt very strong. Thankful to Rhode Island Hot Yoga and Training for Warriors, I felt very strong going into that race. I just walked too much on the third section, and it was a sting. It was a huge sting when they told us that we had to stop. But I'll tell you what, the two people that I were with really helped with staying positive. The young lady said, "You did great. This is your first year out here. And this course is so tough, and you did 80 miles." She was thrilled because she did 80. And I think the prior year, she had only done 60. And prior to that, she had done 50. So I shouldn't say only, but you know what I mean. In 100 yeah, miles. Yeah. So when I came home, I was like, "I only did 80. And all my friends were like, "You did awesome. You did awesome. 80 miles is great. Who runs 80 miles? And I'm like, "People that don't finish 100. So in my mind, I didn't finish the job. You don't get anything for running 80. But it took a while to let this thing wear off. It's a huge learning experience. I love the fact that I can learn and build from it. As soon as registration opened, I signed up for the race again. And now we're 7 weeks away from me going back and getting the buckle. And I cannot wait. It's such a well-organized, the aid stations were great. The guy told me, "Hey, sit down." He goes, "It's a 5 mile walk back to the start. Or you can wait 5 hours for like an ATV to give you a ride." He goes, "But if you sit down," he said, "if you sit down, I'll make you a couple of quesadillas before you walk back." And that was great. The quesadillas were delicious and it helped. I was walking back and I call it the walk of shame. I love the sport. I love the community. I love that I've learned and grew from that experience. I had plenty of friends that were texting me saying, "What happened? I was tracking you. The tracker stopped. What happened? Are you okay?" So it was like, just, you know, "Hey, didn't finish. DNF, mile 80, DNF, mile 80, DNF, mile 80 was my response. Yeah. I feel like it's good to own it. It's good to be upset. It's good to recognize the failure. On my vision board, it was a failure. Okay. On the big, big, big board, it's a learning experience. You can't get to 100 without getting to 80 first. That's what Nick Bear says. And I've gotten to 100 again, and I've also come up short a couple more times. So the 100-mile distance is my new infatuation. I plan to go back to Mid-State in October, even though that was a pretty crazy experience. And I have a couple of close friends that think I'm absolutely nuts for going back. But that's the way the brain works, right?
Oh, man. And you know this. It's all a journey. And it's all these stepping stones and learning about yourself. So much about running isn't just physical, it's mental. And really, it's about battling what's in your head. I call it the ghost in my head. And those negative thoughts and pushing through and persevering. I totally get it. I haven't attempted a 100-miler. I haven't gone that distance yet. But I can see regular people going, "Oh, you made it 80 miles. That's absolutely incredible." But I get it. It's not your goal. You set a goal. And it's right. Like, you want to hit those goals. Like, I totally get it. Let me ask you something. This is a question I like to ask people. In the Rich Roll book, Finding Ultra, he talks about finding bliss in depletion. And he describes it this way. It's that beautiful place of ascetic purity that is permitted to bloom only when the mind is stopped dead in its tracks and everything else is stripped away, leaving your soul or who you really are to forge a connection with the truth. Do you find that when you're running these 100 milers?
I mean, that's beautifully written and very eloquent. I'm not the first one to obviously, when you're in this type of community, you meet so many people that are dealing with, whether it's they're overcoming grief, overcoming addiction, overcoming alcoholism, depression, weight loss. There's just, and we all have a story. And I think the mental side of it, if you weren't out there soul searching, shout out to my guys from How Was Your Run Today? There's a, like, the soul searching that goes on in something like this. You're signing up for suffering, I like to say. Like, we choose this. Like, there's suffering that you don't choose, and then there's suffering that you choose. And we choose this type of suffering. And when you go out there, and especially like when I touched on the miles 40 through 70 at the Javelina, like, I was in such dark spots just emotionally, though. And I'm like telling myself, this is nothing compared to what you've been through. Like, you've walked the streets with nowhere to go.
Yeah.
With no food, no money, nobody to call, nobody to turn to, literally not knowing where you were going to stay that night. So why can't you keep moving forward in this beautiful setting with beautiful people around you, with music and food at the finish line, with, you know what I mean? Like, not only did you sign up for this, you're in a position in life where you're able to sign up for this, where you're able to take a flight and book a room and hang out with other awesome people that are all doing this crazy thing that we call running or ultra running. So that's my constant fuel. And that's my inside driving piece. I'm like, you've done such dumb stuff, such negative stuff, and you kept moving. Why can't you keep moving in this positive space? So I don't know if I answer the question directly, but when I'm out there, I do hit some super, super low, dark moments mentally and emotionally, but I'm able to snap out of it and just use it as fuel and remind myself, this is way more beautiful than when you were in dark places before. Let's keep moving. Let's get to the finish.
Yeah. How amazing is it to have these experiences to draw on to push you through stuff like that in life? I have a friend where I chat with this about a lot, where, you know, anyone could look at, you know, my past or your past in addiction and go, wow, that was some really bad, bad stuff that happened. But then I look at it nowadays and I go, all of those horrible things brought me to this person that I am today and have given me the ability to be self-aware and to work on myself to be a better person. And I'm really enjoying the person that I'm becoming. I always say I'm becoming the person that I was intended to be. And that never would have happened if I didn't have all of those difficulties and those things to get over. And then I really look at it and then I go, well, were those things that happened, were they really bad? What is good and what is bad? And it's just one of those weird existential things to get into, you know?
Yeah. So I say that often. I could wake up every day and be discouraged and say, I lost so many years to alcoholism and addiction, drug addiction and alcohol. And this is what I don't have. This is what I didn't do. This is what I messed up. This is what I missed out on. Or I could wake up and be super positive about where I am today, healthy, sober, loved by my family, loved by my community, having a community, having real friends that will call me and text me, not just like on a birthday or a holiday, but call me and text me and say, hey, how are you doing? I wanted to check in with you. Or, you know, I read something that you wrote. Are you okay? Like, that, to have that is like, I can't even put a word on it, because I never thought I would get to that point. Because when I was at the lows, you didn't have people checking in on you saying, you know, I mean, you did, but I know I'm kind of getting a little bit off track. But so to kind of flip that, I have this attitude where I say things like, when I was doing dumb stuff, I wasn't like, hey, look at me, I just blew my paycheck again. Hey, look at me, looking for cigarette butts outside of the local Cumberland Farms. I wasn't taking selfies when I was doing that. So now that I'm doing positive, cool stuff in the community, I take the selfies and say, hey, look at me. To continue on that, you're exactly right. We wouldn't be the people we are today if we didn't go through that. Some people have some bad things to say about those that are in addiction. They say it's a choice, it's not a disease. Once again, I'm not a medical professional, but I believe that addiction is something that can affect anybody. It doesn't discriminate whether you believe it's a disease, whether you don't believe that. I do, because I continue to make devastating decisions over and over and over again. I gave up a good life and went back to making devastating decisions because of the disease of addiction. So to overcome that with new, healthy, positive addictions, and I'm the first to admit, I've had to recently check myself. I had a friend even tell me, he's a very good friend also in recovery. He said, in recovery, we talk about when your life becomes unmanageable. And I had some recent stuff pop up personally, financially, where I had to cancel a trip. I had to cancel a marathon last minute because I was getting a little out of control with my spending, with my instant gratification needs, the impulsivity, the addiction part of this, where I'm like, I can afford this. I can sign up for this. I can travel there. I can go do this. I can run another race. I can do this. It's all positive. Like, running a marathon is something positive. Like, it's not, I'm not spending it on drugs and alcohol. I can go spend money on this. I can go spend money on this. And stuff was starting to get a little bit out of control. And I really had to dial it in, check myself, put the brakes on for a few minutes, and just kind of be mature, Maurice, for this season, I'd like to say. maybe not go back to the immature Maurice, but just be more selective about which races I sign up for. And I know I'm getting a little bit off track, but I hope somebody can get something from this. It's not always easy to find the balance. I'm very fortunate that I have a full-time job that allows me to pay the bills and also allows me to take time off where I can do this outside passion. My boss always says it all the time. He says, I know this is the key piece to your sobriety, and I want a sober Maurice working for me. I appreciate and respect a sober Maurice showing up to work passionate and excited, not burnt out, and not in a bad headspace because he can't do these crazy fun things that he likes to do. So to have a boss that talks to me like that is a gift and a blessing in itself. I've only been there for 5 years. They treat me like I've been there for 50. So I'm very, very fortunate in that regard. And it's just finding the right balance where you have to be super productive at work so you can afford to pay the bills and sign up for all these crazy races that don't get less expensive the more you run. So.
Oh, man, that's so great that you have a boss who understands, because you touched on it just a bit here, where there are a lot of people who don't understand alcoholism and addiction, and they truly think it's just a choice. I know for me, almost every night when I was in the depths of it, I said, it's going to be different tomorrow. And that next morning, I was at the corner liquor store, you know, 15 minutes before they could sell me that bottle of vodka. And there was just this constant battle going on in my head of, I don't want to do this, but I can't stop. It's such a hell place to be, where you're doing things that you don't want to do. You don't really know why, and you can't stop it. And if people haven't
It becomes your normal. It becomes your routine.
Yeah. Yeah. And if people haven't experienced that, they don't know what that's like. So they go, well, why didn't you just stop? And it's like, don't you think I freaking thought of that? Come on. But yeah, you talk about balance too. Oh boy, that's something. You know, I'm at 8 years of sobriety, you're at 9, and I don't know when you started to find that was something you needed to focus on. But the journey in sobriety itself is its own journey. And just because we get sober doesn't mean everything is perfect. And I'm glad you shared some of the practical things, you know, about your finances and about, you know, I'm still an addict at heart. I'm completely obsessed with running as well. And I set myself quite a crazy running schedule that my wonderful wife, Erin, is putting up with. But sometimes I think I might be going overboard, you know, and you got to find that balance. Yeah,
you do have to find the balance. And it's crazy because I justify it as it being a healthy addiction. And believe me, I mean, hashtag my therapist says, like, I go to therapy, I go to these group fitness communities to keep my overall mental health in the best place possible. I never want to be the guy that threw away 9 years. I never want to be the guy that doesn't make it to 10 years because he thinks he has everything figured out. There's always somebody out there that's been through more, that has more experience, that can teach me. And right now I'm learning that some of my actions are fueled by that addict personality with that quick impulsivity and that instant gratification. I want to sign up for absolutely every single race that fits on my calendar.
Me too.
Does it make sense? No. Would my boss let me go? Probably. But now you're talking about it's altering my financial situation, which then ties into things where I'm not paying the bills on time and I'm not able to maybe do something super important, like set up an awesome birthday for my mom or travel to see my son, like things that are super important that don't involve running. I mean, the trip that I had to cancel did involve my son and did involve running. It's another blessing where I was reconnected with my adult son after 18 years of not seeing him. And it was founded on the fact that he noticed that I was living a positive life. He saw that I was running. He saw that I was active in the community. After a handful of years, he decided to reach out. And it was short and sweet. And we've been reconnected for over 2 years. And it's a blessing. Like, and to think that I'm in a position where my two adult sons want to hang out with me, text me, and ask me to make plans, where 10 to 12 years ago, that was absolutely not the case. Oh, so, yeah.
That makes me so happy for you that sobriety has brought you back to your sons. And we talked a little bit about that when we were running the Blue Hills there. Well, I say running. There's a lot of slow climbing up those freaking hills.
My pace yesterday was 30 minutes out there. It's crazy. There's not too many runnable sections, but
yeah,
it's great training for the legs, great elevation. And it's like those memes that you see in the ultra running community, if you follow any of that stuff. And it's like, here's the person that's going to pass you on the uphill. And it's like somebody that's 25 years older than you with the two walking poles. I had my poles out yesterday, and I think I did get past a couple of times.
Nice.
People that were older than me.
Let me ask you about one more thing. You talk a lot about community, which we say it on this podcast a lot. Community is a way to battle addiction. I know in my alcoholism, it wanted me to isolate and separate myself from everyone. And I ended up, you know, like alone in an apartment. Community is a strong force. And you're involved with the Heron Project. You're running the Boston Marathon. I've seen it all over social media recently. They've got pictures of you all over Boston right now, don't they? You were on some buildings in other areas. Yeah. Like, can you tell me a little bit about the Heron Project, your involvement with them and Boston and all that?
So thank you for bringing it back up. The Heron Project, if you don't know the Chris Heron story, he was an NBA star for the Boston Celtics, lost his NBA career, was struggling with addiction, now has 15 years of continued sobriety and travels the country talking to everybody from students to faculty to just large groups, mostly students, I think. And I never want to like get the story wrong. But his passion is sharing his story that, you know, it can happen to anybody, but not so much like, hey, this is what happens when you become a drug addict. It's like, why become a drug addict? Why? What's making you want to make those decisions right now? And if you're making those decisions, let's stop it right now. So it's more so, he says, day one, than say, hey, look what happened to Maurice when he became a drug addict. He was homeless on the streets and addicted to crack. Well, yes, that's what happened, but why did I start? Why was I not continuing my path of academic success as a senior in high school? why was I searching for something other than being substance free? So he preaches the, you know, I should not just use the word preach, but you know what I mean? Like he it's all about remaining substance free, believing in yourself, knowing that you have self-worth, knowing that you have a family that loves you, that kind of stuff. I've had a desire to run for the Heron Project for several years now, because I know how vocal and passionate they are in the recovery community. People sharing their testimonies of being sober and being drug free and finding running, people that have lost loved ones to addiction that are in the Heron Project just because they want to be a voice and a face in recovery and show that recovery matters and that recovery is possible. People like the director, Pam, who's going to run her 15th Boston and has over 15 years of sobriety. And the coolest thing about her that has always intrigued and inspired me is that she's very vocal and transparent about the fact that she was caught up in the justice in the court system due to her drinking, and the fact that sobriety has allowed her to overcome that. She now speaks at drug courts to help young men and women who are facing drug and alcohol charges or facing the decision to go to treatment or not go to treatment. She's the person that will speak in that courtroom to show you that long-term recovery is possible. And to me, that can't be any more inspirational. I had a judge once sentence me to 1 year, and it was the best thing ever because it was like a free rehab. So the Heron Project, I'm super passionate about it. I applied a couple of years back. I did not get selected. I was told personally by the director to not get discouraged. They get a bunch of applications, to keep applying. I was invited to be an honorary member at their team for the Falmouth Road Race last year because I was already running the race. They invited me to be an honorary member of the team, and I wore their gear. It was in the team photo and all that stuff. And she said, you need to apply again. You need to apply for Boston if you want to get in. You have to just keep applying. I'm very fortunate that I ran four Bostons for Rett Syndrome, two for Technology for Autism, but Rett Syndrome, that community is awesome. And they embraced me for 4 years, five if you include the COVID marathon. So to be accepted onto Team Heron Project this year was just a huge gift. I still remember getting the email at work and saying that I was accepted. Wicked excited, wicked grateful. It just so happens that their color is purple.
Purple.
I ran the Boston Marathon in a purple suit last year for Team Rett, and I plan to do it again this year. We're like 25 days away, 24 days away, I think, from Boston, and I'm going to do it in the purple suit. And that just, it's just because it does tie right into my, hey, look at me mindset. But it's, there are people facing much bigger challenges out there every single day. I can run 26.2 miles. I'm not going to win the thing. Remember, I'm not going to be the guy on the podium. I can run 26.2 miles in a suit to show people that you can do hard things, that we're the lucky ones that get to get up and do this with our minds and our bodies, and that there are people out there facing bigger challenges. Right now, if you can't say it enough, if you know somebody or you are somebody struggling with alcohol or drug addiction, there is a way out. Not everybody's going to become a marathon runner, but you just have to take positive steps in the right direction, one at a time. It's the cliche, one step at a time. One step in the right direction, one day without picking up, leads to 2 days without picking up. In the first few days, you know, when you stopped going to that liquor store in the morning, you felt like dog crap probably, but it gets better. It gets better. The first couple of days of me not using drugs, when I told you I held on to the vodka and the cigarettes, those first couple of days I had panic and anxiety and paranoia. I the third, fourth day, I was so scared. I thought I was going to be diagnosed like schizophrenic because I just was having all of these crazy thoughts and dreams, and I just didn't know where my life was going to go. But I knew that going back to picking up drugs was not the answer. And then once I had 7 days, I said, wow, you made it 7 days and you didn't get high. And then I had 14. And before you know it, it's 30 days. And before you know it, it's 6 months. And it's like, wow, you did get a job. You did get your driver's license back. you did do all these things. So to be involved in a community like the Heron Project that shares those type of stories and is very passionate about the recovery is possible mission. I love what Pam says. She says, I don't run to stay sober. I get to run because I am sober. And it's true. Like if I wasn't clean and sober, I wouldn't be being invited to the Boston Marathon as a charity runner. One of my long-term goals is to qualify for Boston. But until then, I take the role as a charity runner. I'm very grateful for it. These charities rely on runners like us to raise money and awareness during like a world major event like this. So wicked excited. Thank you for bringing it back up and shout out to the Heron Project.
No, awesome. Let's start to get things wrapped up here. And the final thing is I'll just give you the opportunity. What would you want to share with anyone who's struggling with alcoholism or addiction? What advice can you give them to get on the right path?
Small steps and small actions. It's remove yourself from the current situation. I knew that if I hung out on that back street for another night, I would continue to use drugs and be around people that use drugs. I didn't know where I was going to go. And I wasn't ready to give up everything. I keep saying, you know, I held on to that vodka bottle that weekend. I didn't last all weekend, obviously, but you know what I mean. I knew that if I removed myself from that situation, from that setting, that I wouldn't be around the drug use. It has to be small steps. You have to celebrate the small steps. The first big step is to just know that the other side is much brighter. Life is much better without drugs and alcohol. You have to start with stopping using for one day. One day turns to 2 days. When you make it one full day, when you make it two full days, celebrate those victories and they all add up. I have this mindset. I have this mantra. It all adds up. It all adds up. Get to 7 days, get to 14 days. Go to meetings, meet people that are just like you that only have 1 day, 2 days, 3 days. And I shouldn't say the word only. You're not supposed to say that in recovery. They have the same situation as you where they just stopped using and they need to be around people. Like what you said, community, 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 community. I am so fortunate that I'm involved with all of these communities with beautiful people that don't use drugs and alcohol. For some people, it's fitness. For some people, it's running. For some people, it's yoga. For some people, it's a book club, a cooking club, going back to school. Just get around people that don't use. Tell people your story. Tell people, hey, I was just drinking like a maniac last week. I just stopped. I need somebody to hang out with. Let's go get a burger. Let's go. Like I never, me and my buddy, Robbie, we joke around about it all the time. And it's not a joke. Like we would never make time to plan for a dinner and go out to just grab a burger, have a shake, go get iced coffee. We never did that. We were so worried about the money being used for drugs and alcohol. Mm. So just find somebody that you can hang out with that doesn't use drugs or alcohol. That's my best advice.
Thank you so much for spending time with me this morning, Maurice.
Thank you for having me and for listening.
This was awesome. And, you know, we talk about community. I want to surround myself with you, man. Let's set up a few more runs and get-togethers.
Awesome. Let's do it again.
Yeah. Cool.
And let's run again. You kicked my butt that day on the trail, and you have the cool video. You know I want to hang out again.
that's my in. I have the mini drone. But truly.
And you're awesome. You're super positive. You're fast. You're fun. Shout out to Rhode Island Hot Yoga. That's where we met.
That's where we met. Awesome. Yeah. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Grateful to have you.
Thank you, Doug. Thank you so much.